All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim.
And welcome one and all to episode 21 of the SLS Cast. Seems like we've been doing this for a while. What do you think there, sir?
I think so, but hang on, let me pour myself a little drink for this episode. Oh yeah, letting the wine flow for our 21st episode.
Outstanding. Well, I let my mixed drink action go here as I so that was
did I just hear the ice from your big gulp?
Oh, I get big. I have big, huge cups for my drinks.
That is the American way. You never see that stuff in like Finland or anything.
No. You'd hear, you know, maybe the glass clink a little bit. No. I don't need a little pussy shot glass. I need a man-sized 32-ounce cup, and that's what I put my mixed drinks in.
Nice. What is your mixed drink for this morning?
My mixed drink. Yes, and as you and he's not kidding. It is this morning, folks. We're doing this early. My mixed drink of choice is my personal favorite. It is a drink that a buddy of mine came up with and doctored over the years. It is a concoction consisting of Tito's vodka, because that is the best vodka, and it then has triple sec, sweet and sour, Rose's lime, and Ocean Spray, of course, again, top shelf, cranberry juice.
Is that like the toppest you can go in the realm of cranberry juices?
I'm pretty sure. I suppose there's probably some, you know, uppity hipster cranberry juice store somewhere in the world. And
well, I think
knows?
That's all of Whole Foods. I think Whole Foods itself is the uppity hipster store.
I've heard that one's called Whole Paycheck because your whole paycheck because it's really expensive. I don't know.
Yeah. If I had food stamps, I'd go there.
And buy, you know, two mangoes, you know, or something, I guess. All right. So how's life been treating you, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm drinking a California Red, so it's a little tart. It's tarting up my mouth. So you're going to be hearing a lot of, like...
That's okay. We have snacking. To, you know what, we with our celebratory, honorary celebration, that made sense. You see, we can enjoy the tartness of your California Red because it's 21st episode, so we got to celebrate the 21st theme, so...
Yeah, and especially at 5:30 in the morning, we were gonna.
For whatever it's worth, it's 7:30 in the morning. So you know, for me, doesn't help you, I guess.
Nah, it's okay. But other than that, I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Outstanding.
Surprisingly chipper right now, chipper and awake, and excited to do what we do best.
Yes, and you know, if we had been smart about this, we would have been covering all 21st Century Fox movies this time. But we weren't, so...
You mean counting all 21st Century Fox movies?
Yes, doing all the 21st Century Fox, because it's the 21st episode where we are drinking drinks, because it's the theme of being 21.
Did you say 20th Century Fox, or did you say 21st?
No, I said 21st.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, 21st okay. Century Fox.
Now, because I've only had 4 hours, I'm probably going to be hallucinating.
Oh, no, I got you beat, bro. I was up last night.
Are you not
night.
Really drinking a cup? Do you really not have, like, a big cup in hand? Am I just
well, it's
visualizing
not currently,
ice?
It's not currently in my hand. It's on my coaster. But, I got this really cool board game. It's called Arkham Horror. And I went over to a friend's house last night, and we were playing it till almost 2 o'clock in the morning. And there was much drinking there as well. And then I didn't get home and in bed till almost 3:30. So I mean, I had
last
to...
night.
I'm sorry.
I drank a bottle of vodka while playing a board game.
Yes, pretty much. It's a really fun game, though. I, you know, yeah. So while I didn't have to get up as early as you, I figured maybe if I only got 2.5 hours of sleep, you know, or 3.5 hours of sleep, maybe I could be with you there in solidarity.
Well, if anything, Matt, 2 hours of sleep only sexifies your voice.
I am sure I must be sounding fantastic. I must sound like I had been smoking a pack of Pall Malls or something, you know? How you doing there, sweetie? So, yeah.
We now sound like a Zydeco podcast and we do a film podcast.
And indeed. So, okay, well, how about we get to the news then?
Yes.
The news! So who's going to go first?
You know what? I'll go ahead and go, because since we are an unofficial Netflix show, I'm going to start this off with official Netflix news.
Sounds like a plan.
Now, as we all know, at least for me, the only Netflix subscription I have is for the instant watch Netflix dealio, where you just watch the streaming movies for $7.99 a month. Well, apparently Netflix has been having a problem, which I can't see why, with people sharing their passwords. So I guess they can monitor through IP addresses and whatnot, seeing that more than one person is accessing one account at a time. And originally, there could be two people on one account watching movies at one time, but then they start seeing people watching movies on the same account in California, and other people on the same account over in, I don't know, Arkansas or something. So to fix this, Netflix devised the $11.99, what they call the family plan, to where I think it's up to four people can use it.
Well, so is this four people or four devices? Because currently, even like with my family, we don't share the password. I guess mainly it's not like I'm being all high and mighty. I guess I just don't really have anybody to share it with. But we don't share the password. But you know, Jen has her. She has her Droid Razer Max. I have my Droid Razer Max. Libby has her own laptop, and then we have the Boxy Box. So there's four or five devices right there where we can be using them at the same time. And it's extremely frustrating when I'm out working or doing some chore honey-do list, having to wait. So I sit down to try and watch some Netflix on my phone, but I can't because Jen's watching something here in the living room, and then Libby's watching something on her laptop. And it says, oh, too many devices. And it used to let you use more than two, but now it does not. So is this going to be four devices or actually four separate users so you could give your password to like three other people?
Four devices.
Okay, four devices. Gotcha.
Yeah. It's supposed to be like four devices within the household.
Yeah, and when I called and I was like, well, I can understand if they weren't in the same location. I was like, because I called them. I was really frustrated because I'm like, well, hang on now. This doesn't make any sense. My wife and my child are using the same router, so why are you counting two devices on that? It's the same router, so I mean, it's ostensibly the same IP being used one time. And they're like, yeah, we know, a device is a device. It counts against the device, not where the device is at. And I was very frustrated, and they're like, if you have the 4DVD plan for like $27 or whatever it is, then you get more devices that you can use. And so the lady said, but honestly, it's just cheaper to go get another streaming plan, and then you do, because that's only $8. And apparently this is their solution now. So $12 instead of $16 gets you four devices.
Yep, $11.99. So I guess it's worth it. I'd only think about getting it if I felt like simultaneously watching a movie on my laptop, watching a movie on the TV, watching a movie on my phone, and then, I don't know, making somebody come over and use their device and watch it on their device.
I guess. That's true. I just, nowadays, if I can't use my Netflix, I just call the house and tell somebody to stop watching. and then I go and get on Netflix. Yeah, all right.
Libby, stop watching your Yo Gabba Gabba.
That's correct.
I want to watch my whatever.
Exactly. I want to watch my House of Cards or whatever it is.
I finished House of Cards last night.
What'd you think?
A very good show. It's a well written show for the thinking person, because it's not one of those shows that gives the audience everything. You actually have to think and pay attention and focus to the story and focus to the characters to fully understand what the hell's going on.
Agreed. So what else you got, sir?
Okay, so the producer of the new Brad Pitt movie, World War Z, has kind of shed some light on the chaos that has been going on post-production-wise for that movie. As we all know, it went into reshoots, and apparently whenever they showed or screened the first cut of the movie for the Paramount producers, fell silent when the movie was over because they felt they had an incomplete movie on their hands. So then they went back and, for multi-millions of dollars, reshot scenes from the movie, shot extra scenes. Apparently they did a big action sequence set in Russia just to make the movie more whole and better off. Now, in the cover story, I'm reading this off of cinemablend.com. In the cover story for the June issue of Vanity Fair, David Lindelof, I guess one of the producers of World War Z, explains to the magazine how Pitt brought him in after production and had been well underway, saying that they had an abrupt and incoherent ending that didn't make sense. And Lindelof says, quote, "I said to them, there are two roads to go down here. Is there material that can be written to make this stuff work better? To have it make sense. To have it have an emotional stake and put logic in all that. And road two, which I think is the long, short road, is that everything changes after Brad's character leaves Israel." End quote. So, a lot of people are saying, especially here on Cinema Blend, that this could be, you know, it's not normal for a producer, for a person that made a movie and took part, especially with a multi-million dollar movie that's supposed to be a big blockbuster type movie to make its money back. You never really hear people that work on movies like that come out and tell you about the problems and actually go into detail about the issues of that movie, because they don't want to keep people from going to see it. So Cinema Blend, as well as everybody else, has been hypothesizing that maybe the movie is good and he's just coming out and saying, okay, well, these were the problems that we had, but now we have a really good movie to show you, and, you know, going back and doing reshoots are totally worth it. Or he's coming out and just screwing it all because he had enough and just saying, well, you know, the movie's shitty, but at one time it used to be shittier. So I guess we will see. I know this is on both of our lists to go check out whenever it becomes released.
Yes, I am curious. I'm cautious with this one. I'm not necessarily excited about it. And news stories like this are further waning my desire to go and see this movie, or at least be excited about it.
But we will see in the coming months. My next piece of news is Clint Eastwood news, and Clint Eastwood says that he'd love to be directing at the age of 105. I don't think there's really much to add on to that, other than I hope his movies pick up in pace
I hope he makes it.
No, me too. I mean, he's made some really good movies. He's been in some really good movies as of late. Well, minus Trouble with the Curve. But you have Gran Torino, which I thoroughly enjoyed. He hasn't made a really bad movie, I don't think. I mean, even the J. Edgar Hoover movie, J. Edgar, I thought was really good and entertaining. But yeah, we'll see what he does. I really hope he decides to make another Western sometime in the future. In the near future, I guess. But time will tell.
Indeed.
I have three more pieces of news left, and these are going to be Star Wars news. The first one is Carrie Fisher is reiterating her involvement in the Star Wars sequel. And she says, quote, "I'm glad they're doing a movie because they are sending a trainer to my house so I can get in really good shape. So I'm really eating a lot of sugar in advance, as you can see. By the time I really get down to it, I will have eaten everything." So I guess they're really wanting to attempt to make Princess Leia hot and sexy, or somewhat hot and try to resemble her from the 70s and 80s that a lot of the fanboys grew up touching themselves to, I would imagine. Or they're planning on putting her in that same garb that she wore at the beginning of Return of the Jedi.
I think what's going to be really, really sad at the end of the day is everybody's going ape shit over Carrie Fisher being back, Harrison Ford being back, whatever, Mark Hamill being back, and you know, she's gotten a trainer, everybody's going all crazy, and then it's going to be like Spock in Star Trek, where he's on screen for all of like a minute and a half or something, and everybody's going to be like, man, I waited all these years for this, and Carrie Fisher's going to be like, I fucking worked out for a year and a half, goddammit, what the fuck? So yeah, I'm kind of interested to see how this all pans out.
Well, we will find out in 2015. She also said in the same interview that, quote, I like being bought by Disney because they never wanted to buy me before, so I guess that's also a good feeling, a good sensation, is wanting to be wanted by a property that really didn't want anything to do with you beforehand. Now, moving on to the second part of the Star Wars news, is that Star Wars will be getting a Navajo translation. That is right. The Navajo Native Americans would like to make Star Wars more accessible within their own dialect. And the Navajo Nation Museum went to Lucasfilm wanting to put this together, because as we sure have learned in history class, at least students, kids, people should have, that the Navajo dialect, their language is kind of going out, is fading away quick. So this is kind of an attempt to preserve the language and to make the language not only entertaining but appealing to kids and I guess other adults. And why not try to profit off that or try to piggyback off the success and the memorable aspect of Star Wars itself? So I think this is an excellent move. I mean, this goes to show that they are really fighting for this cause, and they were willing to do anything to help themselves out. Go right on. Navajo.
Right on.
I'm going to make a shirt that just says Go Navajo on it and sell it for $50. Now, tart. John Williams will be back is supposed to be back, according to J.J. Williams, to score episode 7. Sorry, I have to go through all
you
the
You almost said 21, didn't you?
All right, episode 21. Well, yeah. You know, in about 10 years, we're going to be able to say episode 21, I'm sure. J.J. Abrams goes on to say that basically John Williams is a influential member of the Star Wars community and of the Star Wars family, so in no doubt in his mind that John Williams should be back to score episode 7. He has been in the family longer than I have. So we will look forward to seeing that. And yeah, I guess it kind of solves the issue or answers any questions on whether or not we're going to have the iconic Star Wars theme song or the, you know, just any of the iconic music within these movies. But hopefully there's going to be some, like, individuality as well, because though this is a Star Wars movie, we're starting to tell new storylines, possibly moving away from the whole Han Solo and Luke Skywalker storyline, even though they're going to be in the movie, but who knows, maybe this means that they might have a bigger part in the movie than we would expect. So I'm looking forward to this more so now than I was beforehand.
Awesome.
So, yay. And how about yourself? What kind of news do you have, Sir Matt?
Well, let us see what kind of news I have. I have some very interesting news. Okay, so this is kind of exciting for me because we actually get to have some news that's relevant that isn't happening yet, but is going to happen very soon. I guess very soon is relative. Now, Man of Steel and Walmart are partnering for a one-day early screening. All right, this is brought to us by The Wrap via Yahoo Movies. And basically what's happening here is Walmart has partnered with Warner Brothers to give its customers exclusive access to an early screening of Man of Steel. Okay, what's going to happen is tickets go on sale on May 18th at 8 a.m. in 3,700 Walmart stores. And you'll get to choose between 2D showing or 3D showing, and you get up to 4 tickets per person. The screening will be in selected local theaters nationwide at 7 p.m. on June 13th, which is one day before the general release. The other cool thing is that each ticket bought at Walmart is also going to feature a code that allows customers to pre-order their own Blu-ray combo pack or HD digital download, which will contain exclusive film content. And you also get a free original digital comic book written by the screenwriter, David Goyer. So
that might be something for me to consider.
I'm telling you, I'm thinking I would like to do that. So it doesn't say that they're limited per se, and so why not? Why not be able to go at 7 p.m.? Knowing that not everybody's going to be able to do it. It's going to be pretty cool. So remember that. May 18th, 8 a.m. Check out your local Walmart and see if you can get an advance ticket to Man of Steel. Yeah, yeah. Another interesting bit of news. Okay, so here's something that's kind of interesting I stumbled across in my adventures online. So we have 3 pretty heavy-duty franchises here. We have the Terminator franchise, the Alien franchise, and the Predator franchise. And it turns out that we have 2 actors who are pretty well known in the world. The first is Bill Paxton, and the second is Hendrickson. And each of these guys has died in all 3 franchises. So I thought that was pretty cool. We have Bill Paxton, who had a very, very tiny role in the first Terminator film. And he gets offed by the butt-naked version of Arnold Schwarzenegger in the first Terminator movie. Okay? And then, of course, Bill Paxton was infamous in Aliens. You know, game over, man! Game over! And he, of course,
the nation.
Yes, he bites the dust in Aliens. And then he was in Predator 2, where Paxton is the cocky cop, and he gets offed by the Predator. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then we have Lance Henriksen, okay? In the precinct shootout of the Terminator movie, Lance Henriksen is a cop, and he dies. And in Aliens, he's Bishop. And I suppose, technically speaking, because he's an android or whatever the hell, he doesn't technically die, but I'm sorry. If you get ripped in half and you're throwing up bile all over the place and just, you know, and I think that's close enough to dead. I'm going to give him credit. And if you don't want to count that because you want to be a technicality bitch, then when they did the crossover of Alien versus Predator, Henriksen's Wayland, which is the original predecessor that ends up creating Bishop anyway, he dies. So, yeah. So I thought that was pretty darn spiffy.
So he dies on multiple levels.
Yes.
In the
Alien.
The same,
yes,
yeah.
In the Alien Predator universe, yeah.
That's deep, man.
I'm telling you what. So I thought that was pretty interesting, though, that 2 different actors have played all these different parts and they all end up dying in the 3 franchises. So there you go. Next, it looks like we have a deal with 20th Century Fox. I don't know. Movie Talk on Yahoo might be a little bit behind here because they're still referring to it as 20th Century Fox instead of 21st Century Fox. But apparently they struck a deal to make a new film version of Guys and Dolls, which is the classic Broadway musical. And apparently, they have it, rumor, reports, what have you, give us Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Channing Tatum are in talks to play the leading roles. Good-natured gangsters Nathan Detroit and Skye Masterson. Which is interesting, because they did work together on G.I. Joe, The Rise of the Cobra. And you would think that maybe that's why they're getting these parts, because the people who are involved in musicals are probably not the kinds of people who would watch the G.I. Joe movies, and therefore are unaware of what happened the last time they worked together. So maybe that's why they're looking at it, because quite frankly, I don't think you should put these two in a movie together.
Well, quite frankly, I don't think they should make a remake of Guys and Dolls. The first one was horrible. Did you ever see it? Brando and Frank Sinatra?
I liked it. I'm sorry, I guess. Why did you not like it?
Yeah, I just thought it was boring, and then, like, it just Brando just completely seemed out of place. not just because of his lack of singing, but he was in Streetcar Named Desire. He was in the Wild Bunch, and he's a method actor. And then you throw him into a popcorn kind of fluffy song and dance musical, and to me, I guess it just didn't really mesh well. I just have a hard time distinguishing fluffy song and dance Brando from I Hate the World Brando.
I don't know, but see, that's the whole point. It's acting. You gotta dance, and you gotta sing, and you gotta have the horse right here with the name of Paul Revere. These are the things that you do when you act. You know, I bought it. I liked it. I too thought that Brando was an odd choice, but I don't know. I thought it really worked out. I really liked I loved the interplay between Sinatra and Brando.
Yeah.
I thought that they pulled it off. Now, that does not mean that Brando can sing. I'm not trying to pretend that he can. But I thought it was good.
I'll have to give this movie a shot. I just remember watching this a couple years ago, whenever I was still acting and performing, and I think I maybe got through halfway, and then I stopped the movie. I guess maybe I had to stop to go do something, but I just never came back to it, and I own it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you definitely should be on that. So, yeah, I would definitely say try and finish it if you can, but I don't know. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is not known for his singing. He can. I've actually heard him sing. And then, of course, you've got Channing Tatum with the Magic Mike dance moves, and I'm pretty sure those are not going to be in a Guys and Dolls movie. And I don't know. This just really seems like an awkward pairing. But well, you know, if it happens, we'll see. It's only in talks, so it's nothing's finalized yet. Let's see here. I got two pieces left. Six places you'll recognize from the background of every movie basically ever. So, Quality Cafe in Los Angeles. You might have seen it once or twice in every single movie ever. Okay, the exact same spot is often featured. So you have movies from like 500 Days of Summer, Training Day, all that kind of ridiculous stuff. And Mad Men, whatever. The Quality Cafe has even, which is in L.A., has even been used for CSI New York. Why they would do something so obvious, I don't know. I guess maybe it's possible there could be a Quality Cafe in New York. But
yeah, especially since CSI really New York, they totally film in New York.
Yeah, I don't know. So, but
not.
Yeah. But the interesting thing here is that Quality Cafe has actually been used so often that in 2006, it closed to the public. So it is now only used as a movie set. Not owned by a studio, just for whatever. Yeah. So it's crazy. There's so many movies that Quality Cafe has been used for. It's ridiculous. Number five is the Vasquez Rocks, which is the slanting rock formation in sci-fi movies made famous originally by the original Star Trek television show. Also, it was used for the scenes for Vulcan in Star Trek IV and the 2009 J.J. Abrams reboot. It's actually been featured in Futurama. You get it in Bones, New Girl, Friends, Bonanza, Blazing Saddles. So, yeah, there you go. The Hatfield House, which happens to be the home of rich superheroes like Batman and Lara Croft, essentially. Tarzan as well. So, it gets pretty crazy. The library is also one that gets used a lot again. Tomb Raider, Batman, and the original Batman movie, with Michael Keaton. It's even used in Orlando. It's just ridiculous. If you're a rich superhero, then yeah, there you go. Also, the infamous staircase, number three, the Bradbury Building. All right. And this is the one, it's got the very particular set of wrought iron stairs that wrap the interior of the building to use as stairs. It was used in Blade Runner. It's also used in 500 Days of Summer. It was also most recently used in The Artist. So if you saw The Artist, when homeboy and homegirl meet, when she's rising a star and he's down on his luck, and they're meeting together, that's the place. Lethal Weapon 4, Pay It Forward, Chinatown. It's also been in TV shows like Quantum Leap. Oh, also CSI New York. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy. Number two is the Greystone Mansion, which has been featured in over 100 movies and episodes of TV shows. It's where the dude gets his rug in The Big Lebowski. It's Daniel Day-Lewis's estate in There Will Be Blood. Kermit the Frog, he has his heart-wrenching Pictures in My Head song is also there. And let's not forget, I'd Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That. Back in 93 or 94, Meatloaf, that was there. So, yeah, ridiculous, right?
You think they could build more sets?
You would think. You know, I mean, I'm happy for location, but yeah. And then, of course, number one, Monument Valley, the most famous rock formations you've never heard of. So essentially, anytime you ever see the famous three sets of buttes, Bonanza, Back to the Future, Part 3, National Lampoon's Vacation, and to make it really simple for you, when Tom Cruise is playing Forrest Gump, and he's running through the desert, and he stops, and he's like, I guess I'm done running. And all that stuff in the desert
Bruce
in the background.
Plays Forrest Gump?
Huh?
You said when Tom Cruise
oh,
plays
God.
Forrest Gump.
I'm sorry. Tom Hanks. Yeah.
When Tom Cruise playing Forrest Gump would be a completely
cool.
different movie.
That would have been pretty cool. Well, the article continues, and it's got a still of Mission Impossible 2, where Tom Cruise is doing the rock climb. And that's why I got him mixed up there. Sorry about that. So it's also featured in Tom Cruise for Mission Impossible 2 for the rock climb. So there. So yeah, that kind of gives you the idea. It's ridiculous. When the big, huge mechanical spider goes off into the sunset at the end of Wild Wild West, also there. And it will be making its upcoming appearance. Okay, Monument Valley will be making its upcoming appearance in the Lone Ranger movie that's being made. So there you go. So that's the six places that you'll recognize from every movie ever. And finally, again with the Man of Steel news, Superman star Henry Cavill is an avid gamer, turns out. According to the WoW Insider, which is World of Warcraft, he enjoys Skyrim and World of Warcraft. This was actually sent in by a listener, Jeremy. He sent us this story yesterday, and it's really kind of interesting. He basically just goes and says that he is a gamer. He does play games like Skyrim and is an avid WoW player. He actually enjoys the game so much that he missed director Zack Snyder's call offering him the part. He said, quote, I saw it was him calling. But the thing is, you can't save World of Warcraft. You can't pause it. It's live. End quote. And it's true. As someone who has played World of Warcraft for many years, yeah, you really can't pause it. You can't stop. So thankfully, Snyder was willing to either call back or at least leave him a message saying, hey, Henry, give me a call. So that worked out. And there we go. So that's my news. News. Looks like it's time for Three Squared. I'm going to have to come up with a better way to kind of do that, man, because I'm tired of doing Wayne's World. That's all I got.
Well, if we want to do the music thing, it has to be like Three Squared.
Okay. And now it's time for Three Squared.
Very nice. I like that.
Yes, Three Squared. All right, so our Three Squared for this week is your favorite trilogy. And since you only have to name one trilogy, because a trilogy is three movies. So I'll go ahead and jump in here. Mine is the Millennium Trilogy, which is the girl with the dragon tattoo, the girl who played with fire, and the girl who kicked the corn. The corn? Really? Girl who kicked the hornet? Really? Okay. The girl who kicked the hornet's nest. All right. So,
and if I play with fire, I want to kick a hornet's nest.
That's right. Now, I will say that I am, clearly, can't pick the American version because there's only been the one movie so far. So this is definitely going for the Swedish trilogy with the subtitles all the way. It's really, truly phenomenal. I highly recommend them. And if you haven't seen it yet, then it's even better because you'll have no frame of reference. So either way. So definitely check out the Swedish versions. They're really, 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 really good. And they star Michael Nyqvist and Noomi Rapace. Check them out. It's the girl who was wronged as a child who comes back to end up helping the idealistic magazine editor solve a murder that ends up turning into kind of a pretty big conspiracy by the end of the trilogy. So that goes to almost the highest levels of government in a kind of like a weapons trafficking and Cold War era stuff. So it's really, really kind of cool. And I highly recommend watching them. Three movies. They're long, but they're really good. The middle one kind of drags a bit, but that's kind of what happens in a middle one because they're really trying to flesh more of the story out.
And on Netflix Instant, they have them to where you can watch them in episodes.
Yes, and with bonus content. So instead of it being 2.5 hours each, they're 3 hours each. So they're broken down into 90-minute episodes. So you actually get bonus content, and you can get them in shorter bursts. So an hour and a half bursts. So there is that as well. Definitely, Millennium Trilogy, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, The Girl Who Played with Fire, The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. What about you, sir?
So I'm going to break away from my original, like, instead of saying, like, Back to the Future or movies that people would automatically think of being, like, their favorite trilogies. And believe it or not, I think you and I both can come up with a number of excellent quality trilogies. But I'm going to go with something to where, as a kid growing up, I just always enjoyed these movies. And even with my grandfather, my grandfather loved this kind of comedy. Really witty, zany, goofy comedy. And it's not, I mean, people call it stupid comedy, but I think there's a lot of talent.
I call it slapstick.
Yeah,
it's not stupid, it's slapstick. That's
exactly. Yeah, it's slapstick and it's well done. And you can't have three movies that are all zany and ridiculous, but they're really entertaining to watch, and it's great for multiple watches as well. I mean, if one of these came on, I would sit down and watch it. Maybe not sit through 25 minutes of commercials every 5 minutes, but if it came on Turner Classic Movies or non-commercial movie show, I would definitely watch it. And these movies are a part of the Naked Gun trilogy. The first one is from the Files of Police Squad.
Hey, at least it's not just me. Woo!
From the Files of Police Squad from 1988, The Smell of Fear, 91, and The Final Insult in 94. The first one follows Detective Frank Drebin, played by the hilarious Leslie Nielsen, who tries to uncover a plan to assassinate Queen Elizabeth II. But it's not just anyone that is planning to assassinate Queen Elizabeth II. It's Khan. I mean, Ricardo Montalban plans on doing so. In The Smell of Fear, the sequel. So Frank discovers that Jane, played by Priscilla, the very sexy Priscilla Presley, has a boyfriend named Robert Goulet, a.k.a. Quentin Hapsburg, who is planning on kidnapping a Dr. Albert S. Meinheimer, who is actually played by Richard Griffiths, who passed away a few weeks ago. And then the final film, The Final Insult, is, I guess, the very episodic, if you could say this is the most in-depth episodic comedic movie, I think this would be it, because this actually has multiple levels to it, which you don't really see much, but hey, it's a Leslie Nielsen spy spoof, so of course you have to have one of these. At this time, he's retired from Police Squad. They introduce a criminal named Rocco Dillon, played by Fred Ward, who is stuck in prison. He's hanging out with people that are planning on blowing up the Academy Awards. And there's just a great ending scene when they're at the Academy Awards and he's going up there and opening up the invitation. And apparently there's a bomb in there, so he says, and the award goes to, oh, there, it's a bomb! And apparently there's a band called It's Bomb or something like that in the audience. They actually get up to accept the award, but really it's a bomb in the envelope. Well, you gotta see it. I can't do any justice. The films also have, which are directed by the hilarious David Zucker, who did Kentucky Fried Movie beforehand, you have Leslie Nielsen, Priscilla Presley, O.J. Simpson, George Kennedy, as well as Robert Goulet in the first one, Ricardo Montalban in the sequel,
Switch them.
I mean, Ricardo Montalban in the first one and Robert Goulet in the sequel.
There you go.
All three films have grossed over $216 million at the box office on a budget of $65 million. So, yeah, so this was a big draw for Paramount Pictures. So if you haven't seen them, you've got to check them out. I mean, they're great. I mean, if you only know David Zucker from doing Scary Movies 3, 4, and 5, then...
Yeah, you got to go back and see Airplane.
You definitely have to go see Airplane. Exactly.
And I will say that when me and my dad went and saw this, saw Naked Gun in the theater, we actually embarrassed the hell out of the rest of our family because we were laughing so hard. It was just completely ridiculous and awesome.
Oh, I bet. It's worthy to embarrass yourself for, I think.
Yes. It was that funny. So cool. All right. Well, there's our three squared. So I believe it is. Oh, and next week's three squared, we've decided we want to we kind of change it up a little bit. We're going to do something we don't like. Okay. And it's basically your three Jar Jar Binks characters. So as we all know, Jar Jar Binks is an incredibly annoying and stupefying secondary character from Star Wars Episode One. And so that's what we're looking for. The three movies that contain the worst supporting characters, a la Jar Jar Binks. And I think this will be fun, because we can, you know, it's not necessarily that the movie is bad. The movie might be good otherwise, but this one character just really ticks you off. So this will be interesting. And on that note, I believe it is time for... The Movies!
Fart into the microphone again?
Yes, I did. But it was pretty cool. I have it on key, right?
You did. You have little, you have little trumpet boots.
That's right. So, all right. So we had three movies this week. We had 42, Headhunters, and Pain and Gain. Two of which are based on true stories. One is a biographical sketch, which is 42, based on Jackie Robinson. And then Pain and Gain, which is actually based on a couple of guys, the Sun Jim gang from the early 90s, or mid 90s, I guess, out in Miami. So, and then Headhunters, which is just a really cool action thriller. So, let's start with 42. What did you think, Tim?
I thought 42 was, it's like The Help of this year, and I'll get into that here in a second. So the story of 42 is the Jackie Robinson story of starting out for playing with Montreal and then spending the 1947 baseball season playing for the Brooklyn Dodgers and having a big impact in the whole Major League Baseball franchise because he was the first black player to play with white players and vice versa as well. This is the first integrated of any sport.
Well, it's Major League Baseball. They can't say anything because nearly 8 years prior, there was a minor league team out in Iowa, I believe, and they went completely integrated. Like, not just one person. It was literally...
Oh, really?
Almost
oh,
half wow. The team was black. Yeah.
Well, and there, and this kind of goes with something else about the movie, is that with the plot inconsistencies... Or not inconsistent, with the plot inaccuracies, and then you have a very safe script where, other than one scene in particular that has Alan Tudyk, who plays the coach, I forget what the team was, where he's standing outside the dugout and just calling him, shouting out the N-word at him, just trying to get into his mind head type of thing, and to really psych him out, and just to freak him out, and just to be a big hick asshole to him.
The maybe. Philadelphia Phillies?
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess that was it.
But is that the part? That's the one where he ends up going to the dugout and breaks the bat, right?
Yes.
Yeah, those are the Phillies.
Those are the Phillies. Other than that, the movie plays. It's very safe. It's a very clean-looking movie that it definitely touches on the racial aspect of what the majority of the white players thought of Jackie Robinson coming in to play baseball on their team. And what the general populace felt. Then you throw in some lighthearted humor in it, and then you have the melodramatic sequences where it's like any other movie that pertains to racial issues, whether it be The Help or even movies like Remember the Titans. It's like they all have these melodramatic scenes that we kind of that we see too much of. But with saying that, is entertaining to watch. It's like The Help in that sense, to where it's entertaining to watch, but it's a really safe movie to where you can bring your kids to see it for the most part. It is, a family film that teaches you about this particular time in history, though it does take some royalties. It's well made, definitely.
I would agree with that.
And it gets the message across. It gets the point across that Jackie Robinson was a great player. It's what the team needed. It's what the nation needed to see. It really started the idea of accepting not only the African-American culture as a culture, but as well as a fellow individual and a fellow American that you can actually go out and play the all-American sport with. So that signifies a lot. And this movie does get that across. Again, it just, it just plays it, everything just really, really safe.
Well, that's fair. I guess that's fair. I didn't like it.
You didn't like it? Okay.
No, I'll give it 3 stars. I mean, it's not a bad movie. It's just tired. I'm tired of the white guilt. I'm tired of black guy does something cool, so let's go ahead and accept him. Instead of in movies like Amistad or Malcolm X, even, where it's we are people and you need to accept us because we're people. I think movies like that do a much better job of not just explaining the plight that needs to be focused on, instead of feel sorry for somebody and we should feel bad because people that we may or may not have even been related to or even knew or maybe were not even alive for did something mean once upon a time to somebody else. These things are turning into a trope. Things like The Help are much better because they take an inventive way to talk about these things, and that's fine. But I think that, especially with someone like Jackie Robinson, who did so much more, I think that instead of just focusing on that one season, primarily the 47, yes, they did do the 46 season, but instead of focusing so heavily on the 47 season, I think they needed to start with the 47 season and then do like 5 years of his life from there. Because I think that in order to appreciate what this man meant to the game of baseball, you need to see his career. Not, oh look, he got us to the World Series, so maybe black people aren't so bad. Which is what I take away from this movie. And again, it's not that it's poorly done. It's well shot, it's well written, it's too safe. It's just telling a story, it's just telling the, poor black man who does something nice and something good and we should feel bad. And I'm tired of it. There are much more intelligent ways to discuss the things that people still think that we need to discuss. I don't know that we still need to discuss them so much and so harshly, but I do think it's important that people understand. I just don't think that this movie does a good job of saying it. So 3 stars for me, because it's not a poor movie, it's not a bad movie, but I'm just tired of it.
It's well made. It's a very old fashioned movie, and watching it, I was just thinking of Pride of the Yankees, for example. It's very old fashioned. I mean, even the humor is old fashioned in a way to where it's very tongue in cheek, very kind of British humor esque, to where it's more of like chuckles, hearty chuckles, honest chuckles, but it doesn't try too hard either. I think this is why I kind of catch myself before I say something too harsh, because the movie has a nice flow to it, but it is just really sad. Even with Harrison Ford's character, which I've got to admit that I think this is the first time I've ever seen Harrison Ford actually play an older man for once, I guess, like a significantly older man.
And being that he's 70, I think it's about damn time.
Exactly. It's he plays the character as well. I mean, he's not necessarily the crantankerous, the obvious crantankerous character as we've seen in a lot of movies.
Cantankerous.
Did I say crantankerous?
Yeah, cantankerous.
I cannot talk right now. But it could have been worse, though. I mean, it could have been worse. I mean, if we didn't have this movie, we probably would have had a 3-hour-long character retrospective, kind of like Ray or
But see, I think something like that would have been fitting. He was more than this one season. If you want to explain his contribution to the world, then show the contribution. Don't just show the initial struggle, because it didn't just stop at the end of the season. And what he did for not just baseball, but for breaking color lines and all that, didn't just happen in this one year. And that's why I think we pretty much agree on it, more or less. There's so many better ways to tell this story, I think. And again, it's not that it's a bad movie. It is well shot. It's well executed. And despite it playing it so safe, it's still, I think, pretty well written. And I liked Harrison Ford. I thought he did a good job. And, you know, honestly, for me, the most honest character really was the Phillies manager, Ben Chapman, played by Alan Tudyk. Tudyk, I guess? I don't know.
And it does, like, all the stereotypical things that you see in a sports movie, especially when they reveal, like, in every baseball movie, you usually have, like, a bigger name actor, or not necessarily a bigger name actor, but an actor that everybody kind of knows to play the, like, the sports announcer. So, of course, they have John C. McGinley, who was in Platoon. He also was in Scrubs. He was kind of the goofy a-hole doctor, I guess. Never watched it.
I love John C. McGinley. He's awesome. He was not a a-hole either. He was just fantastic.
Oh, really? The character wasn't? Okay. Well, I...
No, the character was not. He was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent character actor. I mean, he's been in a lot of stuff. He's definitely one of those guys where you'd never know... You don't know his name. Or a lot of people don't know his name, but if they saw him, they're like, oh, yeah, I know him. He was in, you know, that one movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, he plays the baseball announcer, Red Barber, and they just do this thing to where, like, when it, like, you hear the voice off screen, and then the camera, like, pans by, and then you see who it is, and, you know, you have the same reaction with every single baseball movie or every single sports movie where they do the big reveal of the announcer, where you're just like, oh, hey, yeah, it's that guy. we're just tired of these kinds of movies.
I think so.
This style of movie.
All right, so we agree that on the merits of filmmaking, it's a good movie, but we would have preferred something better.
Yes.
All right, very good. So let's move along to Headhunters. And this was a recommendation of yours, and I gotta say, it was really cool to see this movie for me, because there's a gentleman here who plays the bad guy, I guess? I mean, because your hero is kind of a bad guy, but whatever.
Right.
But yes, the bad guy, the really bad guy, is played by Nikolaj Coster-Waldau, and I was like, man, I didn't know this guy, I've seen this guy. And turns out he was in a short-lived Fox television show that I really, really liked called New Amsterdam. And he's also currently playing the part of Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones. So, yay! How exciting is that? It was just really cool to see this movie. I love this movie. This was a fantastic movie. It is a film from Norway, and basically it's about a guy who is a successful headhunter. His name's Roger Brown, and he has a way lavish lifestyle because he wants to keep his wife, who is basically a supermodel, who runs an art gallery, her own art gallery, because, you know, he helped build it, by stealing art. So it's kind of like a Thomas Crown affair after they got together, I suppose. So he keeps this hidden from her, and in comes this one guy named Klaus Gree. Klaus is a former CEO who eventually wants to become the CEO of a company called Pathfinder, who has contracted Roger Brown's company, headhunting company, to find the new CEO. Well, it turns out there's more to it than it seems, because Klaus is not what he seems, and yet Klaus has something Roger wants, which is an exceptionally rare painting that was supposedly stolen by the Germans during World War II. And again, this is like the one, this is kind of like the big score. So Roger has to try and take this painting, or he takes this painting, and then, oh dear Lord, does the shit hit the fan. And it is just... it's really cool, lots of twists, lots of turns, and just like in any action film, quite a few convenient things happen to further to advance the plot in the way that you need, but you're willing to forgive that because the pacing is so good, the story is interesting, mainly because this is not an American movie, this is not a Hollywood movie, this is a Norwegian movie. And man, I think I'm just gonna, I mean, when you got stuff coming out from that part of the world, like the Millennium Trilogy, and now like movies like this Headhunters film, I think I'm just gonna go and get, I'm just gonna start watching Norwegian cinema.
No kidding. I mean, this movie definitely packs multiple punches and throws you so many curveballs. And I just love a movie, and I don't want to give anything away. Because
no.
I think like people should definitely see this movie, but I love seeing movies like this where you really root for the main guy, because you know he's kind of bad, but by the end of the movie he has a big character turnaround, because at the end of the movie he is completely opposite from what he was at the beginning of the movie.
He truly is the dynamic. Yes, I have to say, yeah, must agree. He truly is the dynamic character of this movie. It's just completely amazing to watch what happens to this guy.
Yeah, and I have to say that we weren't the only ones who enjoyed it. This movie was seen by 104,000 Norwegians during the film's opening weekend, the 26th of August in 2011. And it made that movie the second best opening weekend in Norwegian history after this movie called Max Manus. And it was by far the most watched domestic film of the year, with 557,086 tickets sold at the cinema, and the second most watched, including foreign films, only beaten out by Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. And one last thing, Headhunters was the first Norwegian film to be nominated for a BAFTA in the category of Best Film Not in the English Language. So, and also BAFTA, check out the BAFTAs whenever they release like their nominations or who's won what, because I think the BAFTAs more so than the Academy Awards are kind of like the next notch up from the Oscars when it comes to really good movies, because it's not all about the consumer market of films either. I mean, they really look for particular acting, particular entertainment, right? Really good stuff, not just marketing ploys, I guess, or what marketing worked out to get an actor nominated or get a movie nominated for anything. But yes, this is a phenomenal movie. There's some funny stuff in it. There's a lot of irony in the movie. There's a lot of violence in the movie, but it all just meshes well together. I think the best foreign film since that I enjoyed and that I honestly loved since the Millennium Trilogy. So
I would say this is my favorite since The Artist.
Well, The Artist as well. Yeah.
I enjoyed The Artist. And according to Wikipedia, there is a Hollywood remake planned. So the rights to the English language remake apparently were sold to Summit Entertainment in 2011, while the Norwegian film was still in production. So we may yet see an English version of this. I would say don't wait. Watch this one. This is just a phenomenal movie. So.
Definitely, because I can't see how a Hollywood version will be able to make it
There's
better.
No way it can be better, yeah. I think it's just fine. Get over the fact that it's got subtitles.
So, 30 minutes into it, subtitles don't matter.
Exactly, and that's the whole thing, is that once... And if you just give subtitles a chance and you just start... It is an acquired taste, but once you've acquired it, you stop noticing that they're there. Because it's all in your peripheral vision. You're looking straight at the screen and you'll be able to see the stuff on the bottom. I promise it works. It's amazing. So, awesome. Okay, well, let's see. We got one more that I was able to see. Unfortunately, Tim was not able to. This is quite possibly, I can't believe I'm saying this, this is quite possibly the best Michael Bay movie ever. And I'm saying this is going up against, like, The Rock and stuff, okay?
Wow, those are some fighting words there, sir.
I'm telling you, this one is Pain and Gain. All right, now Pain and Gain is basically the Hollywood version of the, quote, true story. All right, so basically we know that the core of this is true. There were some bodybuilders who got involved in, who basically tortured a guy into signing over his entire fortune to them. And then they decided to repeat the process, and of course people die, and they're fugitives. So, that's kind of the whole thing in a nutshell, which is important because I don't want to spoil it. However, what this movie does right, though, is that it makes it never, ever takes itself seriously. At no point does this movie take itself seriously. At one point, it gets so completely outlandish towards the end of the movie that they literally do a freeze frame, and at the bottom of the screen, it says, "This is still a true story." So, my favorite character in this is actually Dwayne Johnson. Okay, he actually plays a born-again Christian who is not the brightest bulb in the box and gets sucked into the plot that happens here. And yet he kind of, even though he does do bad things, he believes that he's driven by kind of a higher power. And he does not allow it to make him be a bad person. So no matter how screwed up the scenario gets, you're still rooting for this guy. The other side of this thing is Mark Wahlberg. I have always been a big fan of Mark Wahlberg. I really do think he's a good actor. I think that he really just knows how to pick great roles. This is definitely one of the best roles I've ever seen him play. These guys, the thing is that you just want to care what happens to these guys. And yet, especially in the case of Mark Wahlberg's character, where he plays a guy by the name of Daniel Lugo, you recognize that this is not a good guy. And you don't feel bad for him. Or let me rephrase that. You won't feel bad for him should he get his comeuppance. But at the same time, that's okay. And it's just fun to watch because these guys are so stupid, they don't even understand they're so stupid. And it's not a slam against bodybuilders or anything. It's just these particular guys are truly meatheads. And the fact that it is actually based on a true story of these guys who did these things, and it was literally their stupidity that caught up with them, makes it just that much more fun. This movie, its brilliance, again, is that it never, ever, ever takes itself too seriously. And the second that you think it is, something happens to remind you, come on now, you know how this is going to turn out. So I would definitely say, for me, best Michael Bay movie ever. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Everyone in the theater was having a great time with this movie when I was watching as well. We were all laughing at the right parts, and I gave it 5 stars. This just was a complete blast, a great thrill ride. And the only reason, now if it had tried to take itself seriously, then it would have sucked. But I will say that for a Michael Bay movie, this is the other reason why I think this is so good. One explosion. That's it.
Wow.
One explosion for the whole movie.
Was it a big one?
No. One car. That's it.
Cool.
Yes. I would highly recommend this movie to anybody. People, chicks, they'll love the eye candy. Guys, they'll love the caper aspect to it. People who like comedies are going to laugh their asses off at this. And I think the unsung hero of this movie, though, is definitely Tony Shalhoub, who plays, and I'm using the air quotes here, the victim in this, because they play him in such a fashion that you don't feel sorry for this guy at all. He's the one. Yeah, that's one of the best parts, because this guy has this terrible thing happen to him where he is basically kidnapped and they force him to sign over his entire fortune. But because of the way that the paperwork works, it looks legit on paper. And because he is such a jerk and such an asshole, nobody believes him. And it's kind of like, well, good, bitch, you deserve it. So just go see this movie. Go see this movie. It's really cool. I guess that brings us to the end, does it not?
Yes, it does. I believe so. Yet to our 21st episode.
Woo! All right, so next week, we're going to be seeing Iron Man 3, God Bless America, and the original Great Gatsby in preparation for the new Great Gatsby coming out. And
should have titled
it
The New Great Gatsby.
Indeed. or they should have just called it Great Gatsby, the Moulin Rouge edition.
The Jay-Z edition.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. Again, next week's 3 Squared is going to be your 3 Jar Jar Binks characters. which are those supporting characters that you just don't like. And
people who really Jar Jar up a movie.
Exactly. If you Jar Jar up this movie, that's it. So, it is time for the spiel. Yes?
Spiel on.
All right, here we go. And the music that you've been listening to, as always, has been provided to you by our music partners, Cries of Solace. You can check them out at criesofsolace.com. You can go to reverbnation.com, go down to Houston, search them there as well. You can go to myspace.com or facebook.com/criesofsolace. As far as we're concerned, well, we're still the SLS cast. You can go to slscast.com. You can send us an email to theslscast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @theslscast. You can go to Facebook and look us up there as well. And of course, you can always subscribe on iTunes. And that is that. We will see you for episode 22. Peace out, homies.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.